Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. And tonight, my co-host, Red Beckman, will be joining us and looking for some of our guests to show up on a switchboard. And I'm going to open us with a prayer to get us started. Almighty Father in heaven, we just are just so grateful for the way that you bless us and the way that you open our minds to truth. And we ask that you do that tonight. Open our minds to truth, Father. Fill us with your Spirit and have your Spirit go before us in everything that we do and say here this evening. I just pray that you bless my co-host, Red Beckman, tonight. That I know that he's been having a few little trials with his health, and I see him on our switchboard now, and I just I pray that your healing hand would be on him, and we're just thankful, Father, for the good things that you've shown us regarding, like, Dr. James Walker's concoctions, if you will, that helps clear all of our blood clots out of our system, and we're just thankful that you have shown us these things and so many other things that we can heal ourselves naturally without having to go to this corrupted medical system that we have in this country and be forced to take drugs that are designed not to heal us and not to make us better, but just to cover the symptoms. And Father, we just, I'm just thankful for having Red with us and that he's been able to be a mentor for us here. We're thankful for the guests that we have tonight, and we ask that you bless this show and open the hearts and minds of our listeners that we might be able to open their eyes to some things that are going on out there, especially the evil that is going on in this country. And maybe we can help open some eyes to that tonight. So we ask you to be with us in the name of your Son, Yahshua HaMashiach, we pray. Amen. Well, Red, I see you're on with us. Got you live mic'd. Are you got an open mic there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, we're glad you're with us. I believe area code 707, is that you, Doug?
Yes, it is.
Great. Do you have your co-host Jim with you tonight?
He should have called in by now. I guess.
Do you know, would he be calling in on a 518 number?
Let's see here. Boy, oh boy. I don't have his number in front, so I can't even answer that question.
Let me put it this way. Jim, if you're on and you're listening and you want an open mic, just hit a 1 and it will raise your hand for me so that I can get you with a live mic. So if anybody wants to ask a question or make a comment, make sure you hit a 1 when you call into our call-in number. And that will raise your hand so that I will give you a live mic. Well, Doug, I want to welcome all the folks from Crusade Radio here with us tonight, and I know you're going to be simulcasting for the first hour. Is that correct? You suggested that we talk about mind control tonight, and I've known for some time that you've been at this a long time and working with John DeCamp and people like David Schurter, and I'm hoping David will call in too. David, if you do call in, or if you have called in, please hit a 1 so that we'll give you a live mic tonight. But Doug, I'd like to start this conversation out talking about the satanic side of it.
Okay.
The fact that we're in a spiritual battle, and you know, our Creator gave us free will. He did
right.
not want to dictate our choices to us. He wanted us to voluntarily listen to His word, listen to His truth, follow His commands by our own choosing, not by some psychic control. Because, you know, that's not really the way to have a relationship. And it's also, you know, who wants a bunch of people around them following them like robots? Well, apparently the counterfeit government does. The counterfeit, those that consider themselves gods out there that are nothing more than counterfeits, they seem to want to control people like they're robots. And I believe it's going to help our listeners substantially if they understand that the people that are behind a lot of this mind control and the perversion that's going on out there pray to Lucifer. They're Luciferians or they're Satanist. And I'd like for you to start a little bit by explaining that to the folks.
Okay. Well, folks, maybe I should just first, how am I get involved in this? Would that be helpful so that people understand where I'm coming from?
Yes.
Okay, folks, I was living in Santa Rosa, California, and I moved there in 1982, and in 1992, I was active in the politics. I was elected a Republican official in the party at that time, and I was up for re-election after being out of it for 2 years because I was busy as a founder of some 3 high-tech companies, and so I was too busy to get involved in politics, so I dropped out for 2 years and I came back in running again, and all of a sudden, we were in the paper, and we were the paper was owned by the New York Times. There's only one daily paper in Sonoma County. There's about population about 600,000, and so why would the New York Times pay so much more for the newspaper than the sellers felt it was worth? They had a TV station, but they were obviously, well, come to find out, the reason was because Bohemian Grove is in our county. And the left would go out and protest it every year when they'd have their annual event for 17 days there at the end of July. But so therefore, since the left was there, the conservatives or the right wingers, they would not go there. But I figured the best way to learn about what was going on was get involved there. And so I went out there and protested with them. And I did this because I knew that our government is run by the Council on Foreign Relations in New York City. It's really an unelected secret government. And back in 1967, Myron Fagan, a Jewish playwright from New York and also from Hollywood, put out long play records describing the Illuminati. And he has a picture of the Council Formulations headquarters in New York. And in the report that he put out at that time, and you can go on the internet, and in fact, I would urge everybody to grab pen and paper because we're going to give you a lot of facts tonight. We're not going to go into a lot of detail on them because we're going to give you an overview to help you understand exactly what's going on and why we've lost our country, but they still haven't got total control because they haven't figured out how to get our guns from us without losing too many of their own people. And we're the only country in the world that really has that freedom. And we have, of course, I can remember 20 years ago, they said that we had about 200 million guns in America. And now they say in the last 21 years that we now actually have about 500 million. People know there's something wrong. The media won't tell them what's going on. They know there's something wrong. And why are all these school shootings occurring? And why is there such a rise of Satanism since the Church of Satan was founded in San Francisco back in 1996 by Anton LaVey? And he lived actually in Los Angeles, but he formed the Temple of, the Church of Satan in Santa Rosa, the suburbs. Santa Rosa is less than an hour away from San Francisco. And so the cult is very strong and the Satanism is very strong in San Francisco. So the bottom line is that in 1968, a man joined the Church of Satan in San Francisco named Michael Aquino, A-Q-U-I-N-O. And he went off to the Vietnam War and everything. Well, no one ever knew who he was, but he actually joined the Army and because he had his degree, he was put in the CIA because he was a cult background. What happened was as I said, the Church of Satan was formed in 1966. He joined the Church of Satan in 68, and in very short order, he became the number one high priest in the Church of Satan under Anton LaVey, Michael Aquino, A-Q-U-I-N-O. Now, what was so important about that was that I have a copy of his retirement papers that he retired in 2006 because he was in the Army Special Forces working with the CIA for 40 years. But the way that, and by 1975, he decided that instead of staying in the Church of Satan, he formed the Temple of Set, S-E-T. Set is Egyptian for Satan. Now, the cult doesn't publicize this very much, but I got these from the lips of a man in his late 70s in Hemet, California, back in 1996. He said that I asked him, what's the difference between the Satanists and the Luciferians? And he said, well, as you know, the Church of Satan in Anton LaVey's book he calls the Satanic Bible, he states that they violate all of the Ten Commandments, whereas we Luciferians are above the Satanists, and for every evil deed we do, and we do many evil deeds, we balance the scales by doing a good deed, by donating money or for a hospital wing or a university wing, a library, all kinds of public things to keep the skills balanced. So that's a pretty sick way to live, but that's the way the Illuminati operates. And so back on the Aquino, I was really saddened to learn that the Council of Foreign Relations controls America's politics as an elected government. And for the last many decades, David Rockefeller has been the chairman of it, and then the honorary chairman after he got old. He's actually in his late 90s, 1990. He's in his late 90s right now, but they consider the honorary chair of the Council of Foreign Relations even to this day. So do you want me to go in more detail, or is that a good way to give you the introduction Satanism?
I would like to give just a couple of minutes to Red to kind of come in a little bit and maybe visit a little bit about this satanic counterfeit and how they are behind almost all of the problems that we've got in this country.
Good.
But talk a little bit about your battle. Red, are you got a live mic?
I hope it's open. Can you hear me?
I'm hearing you good loud and clear.
Yeah, well, I hit the right button then. You know, this mind control thing is so... excuse me. It is so massive, and it's in various degrees. Some of it is, you know, not the depth that some of the laboratories around the country have been working with, but the part that really bothers me is the mind control that has been in control of almost the entire populace of our country. I wrote my first book, Born Again Republic, in the fall of 1980, and we sold many, many thousands. Well, I didn't know nothing about book printing, and I had 10,000 printed the first time. And before 30 days were out after we took delivery on them, before the 30 days, we knew we were going to be out by the end of the month. And we ordered another 10,000 right away. And I don't know how many printings we've had now. I don't try to keep track of all that. My wife and I were just talking about it here in the last week, how that of all those many, many thousands, actually truckloads of those books have been, put in the hands of our countrymen, and there is hardly any. I mean, sure, we get a lot of compliments. We get a lot of people that say, oh, we love that book and all, but as far as a stimulant to motivate these people to become involved in the process of trying to address the problems that we have in this country, we just don't see, there's more response now than what we've ever had, but that's because the country is hanging on to a cliff by its fingernails, I think. That's about the only thing that's holding them up at the present time. And there's a lot of people that are getting more concerned about the situation, but that's massive mind control. And, of course, we've talked about the counterfeit on this program quite a bit in the past. In fact, one time we run 13 straight weeks talking about the counterfeit, and we've talked about a lot of different things, and it didn't dawn on me until just here real recent how that this teaching in the government schools and the media and everything about our having a democracy. What a devastating lie that is, and it's so devastating because It's a satanic counterfeit of what our Heavenly Father wanted us to have. You know, in a democracy, we're at the bottom of the pecking order, and God didn't want his people at the bottom of the pecking order. He wanted us up there right next to him, and he wanted government to be below our feet, below us, so we the people. And my goodness, I'll tell you, it is not easy. It is not easy to deprogram these people, even the ones that are, you know, that are unemployed and they're on food stamps and all of that. They're not listening like they should be. They're not activated as they should be. And you have to wonder how bloody do they have to get before they wake up and become, you know, participants in the process of deprogramming an entire nation. Sure, we've got those laboratories and such that they have got where they've just totally, you know, tormented and wrecked the lives of people, you know, in their mind control or scientific experimentation and such. But that's only a small fraction of the people that are being mentally crippled, mentally damaged by mind control. And so it's happening in our churches. It's happening in our schools. Our media is very much a part of it. And, you know, most of the problems that we see generated by the Congress in Washington, D.C., and I've said this many, many, many times, it's a do-nothing Congress. That's a term that's used. They've got a less than 10% credibility rating with the American people. Well, I'm convinced that the reason that we've got a do-nothing Congress is because they are all people who are graduate of government schools and such, and they're mentally crippled, just like I was for the first half of my 85 years. Mentally crippled. I tell people that half of my life I was believing what I was taught in a government school and a government church, and it's still a work in progress to try to be able to overcome all of that. And so this is a great subject. This is something that we really need to talk about. And so I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Thank you, Red. Well, Doug, I hope that gave you a minute there just to figure out where you want to start this discussion. I guess we need to take some people here from kind of a basic level, give them a little bit of idea where you're going with it, and maybe give some description of the kinds of mind control that you're talking about, because in this day of technology, not only do we have the archaic kind of controls that David Schroeder and those that have been victims within the purview of the Franklin cover-up kind of mind control, but now we have frequencies and different types of devices and scalar and other ways that people are being dumbed down and controlled. But I think what you've faced and seen and you know, have interviewed people on and done your research on has really been a physical kind of control where people are put under the control of other people and they have handlers and et cetera. You want to kind of take us back to ground zero as to what you first discovered and how you've moved through that through your career?
Yes, sir. It all started when we formed a Love Intervention for our nation's kids. And what we did was in Santa Rosa, when we found out that the FBI had been notified that children were being sex abused and tortured in Sonoma County, and they weren't doing anything about it, I was so horrified. I had only committed to meet with this family for 1 hour with the understanding that I was going to spend the rest of the day on other plans that I had already made a commitment on. I left that family 14 hours later. I drove home about midnight realizing, Lord, have you just shown me the Achilles heel of the New World Order? Violent crimes against children covered up by law enforcement. And the next morning I woke up and I knew the Lord had been preparing me all of my life since I had gotten married, because I had married a girl who I didn't know until after we got married, but she had multiple personalities. And what happens when a child is sexually abused, it's such a heinous act. The children, of course, can't fight back. They cannot, I'm talking about little children, of course, they cannot outrun, and they can't scream loud enough to be heard, because obviously they're being sexually abused and sodomized in a rural area or in a house where they cannot be heard outside of home. And so just to give people a little update of what goes on, the homosexual community has been allowed to adopt children that are not theirs for decades in San Francisco. And now it's nationwide. In fact, in the issue of Globe that came out with the expose on JonBenet Ramsey, that was the issue dated November the 11th, just, you know, it was 2 months ago. And it says across the top of the Globe, chilling grand jury indictment. The case against JonBenet's parents, and everybody, of course, remembers seeing that on the nightly news when it came out, thanks to a reporter by the name of Charlie Brennan at the Boulder Daily Camera, the daily newspaper there in Boulder, Colorado, where JonBenet was tortured and murdered in her own home. Now, on a page, I don't have a number here, but in the same publication, I was shocked to go to this. A friend of mine from New Jersey, Melinda Kula, sent me a copy of this because I tried to buy it here locally, and it sold out so fast that I didn't get a chance to buy one. And one of the pages is a color picture of Elton John and his hubby, David. These two men had gotten married, and it shows, and their sons, Elijah and Zach, two Jewish names. And the boys, one is Elijah is 10 months old, and he's in the arms of Elton John, and his partner, David Furnish, has Zachary, age 2. And it just makes you sick to think that why, when there's husbands and wives out there seeking to adopt children, why are sodomites allowed to adopt children? They didn't adopt girls. They adopted boys. So they're raising up another generation. And that's what we have going on. It's been going on for decades. It's very seldom ever makes the papers. But they, now that marriages are being permitted in many states, now they're coming out of the closet and publicizing these kind of sick things. Now, I don't believe the Globe supports that. I think they put it there for shock value. to try to awaken people. But I give you this background because in 1980, remember I got involved in this stuff in 92. In 1980, Aquino was a major, and he was a colonel by the name of Vallely, V-A-L-L-E-L-Y, Paul Vallely. And they put out a publication called, hope you folks will all write this down and go on the internet and read a copy of this and send it to all your family and friends and emails and waken them up to what's been going on. That means that we're talking about 33 years ago, okay, or 34, I guess I could say now. But anyway, the name of this publication is from PSYOP, P-S-Y-O-P. PSYOP is a military term for psychological operation. It's their mind control division of the CIA. From PSYOP to Mind War. Mind War is one word. And that's all you need to do. And you'll go right to the website that features it. It's a military publication put out in 1980. And it's such a shocker because you'll see that they have developed this psychological operations for the mind control for decades, and so now they were going to mind war. In other words, using technology, and what they, Aquino and Vallely said in this report, they produced, and you can get a copy of it in with the military cover in color if you want. It says, they said in 1966 and 67, during the Vietnam War, over 22,000 communist troops fighting our military there surrendered without a fight. And the reason they did it is because they used microwave harassment on people. Now, that was obviously early in the war because it didn't even start really escalating until the CIA lied and said that our ships were attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin. And later they admitted that they set the whole thing up, and it was not a CIA, it was not an attack by the communists at all. It was a CIA operation to get the Congress to support building up troops in that war right after Kennedy was killed, because President Kennedy, here he was a Catholic, the only Catholic we ever had as a president, and here he was pulling our troops, our CIA troops, out of Vietnam, and they were already being shipped back when he was assassinated. And so first thing that President Johnson did when he was sworn into office was to reverse that order to ship the CIA out of Vietnam. And so they started escalating the war. And something that people don't know, but it's very important to write this down because I've verified it in several locations. I was told by a 30-year CIA officer in 19—well, I should finish the thought about the Mayan War first, and that is, the point is that over a million people were slaughtered in that war, in the Vietnam War, and we had the technology to use the microwave harassment and get our protect our troops. We didn't need to lose 50-some thousand troops there. We could have used that technology to stop the war and not have to slaughter a million Asians. But that was not the New World Order's goal, the Illuminati's goal. It was obviously to develop that technology to use on Americans. and because they've got to get our guns. And so there's only two things that are preventing us from total takeover. Number one is prayer, and number two is the fact that we have our guns. And the Japanese even said during World War II, they were afraid to invade our mainland because they said there was a gun behind every blade of grass. So now we've gone the last 20 years, I said, from 200 million guns to 500 million guns. And so we better keep praying that we're able to keep our guns. So the result of all this was that Aquino, now let me just tell you, okay, Aquino was put in the Special Forces, Green Berets. And if you remember, they had this song, The Ballad of the Green Beret, and there was a movie out with John Wayne playing a role as an officer in the Green Berets, or that was Army Special Forces. And so I was told this, as I said, actually the year was in 1994 by a man in his living room. He was retired from the CIA. But they say the contract with the CIA is that they call you back in at any time they want you back in. It's a lifetime contract. But he warned me, because I was telling him about Aquino and the mind control and what was going on. He said, Doug, back at the end of World War, Korean War, my first assignment in the CIA was to deprogram people coming out of the communist prisons there in North Korea, because so many of them turned against our country. We want to know how the communists had brainwashed him into doing that. He said that I was involved with MK Ultra back there. That was our first project was MK Ultra. I said, sure, Jim, and I don't question it was a good project to help understand our troops and why they turned against the country. And MK Ultra maybe started out as a good project, but the CIA took it over. And the result is that they're now using it against Americans. They are allowing people to open daycares nationwide. And in fact, they even opened 15 military daycares that were exposed for having the CIA torture the military's children in daycares such as San Francisco's Army Base, Aris Presidio. And that's where Aquino was station in charge of the public relations department. And I said, I even met Aquino one time. I asked him why he would wear such weird attire that dress up like a Halloween costume. But I personally was shocked to learn from him that his name is Jim Quesada, okay? Excuse me. In early 94, he said that since the Green Berets were formed and there was Army Special Forces, every military officer has always been CIA. And so I said, well, then in that case, when we were over there with our Special Forces, fighting the communists over there, then that was really a CIA war. It wasn't an American war, was it? He said, that's right. It was a CIA war. We run that whole thing. And so it's important to understand that, because I was able to verify that not only with him, but I contacted Ron Paul when he was running for president. And so we told him some things, and so he asked us to talk to his national campaign chairman. And we talked to Ron Paul for 15 minutes, and two of us talked to his assistant, the campaign chairman, Ken Snyder, as I recall, for 20 minutes and told them how we realized that we both volunteered to work full-time for the campaign for the duration of a year without pay, and yet no one in the national headquarters was calling us back. And so later on, that Ron Paul and Ken Snyder came to San Francisco, and so I went down there and I spent the day with them. And as we were marching along, after they Ron Paul had spoken at a luncheon at a restaurant, we were going traveling back, and of course everybody wanted to talk to Ron Paul, so I was able to get the ear of Ken Snyder. And I said, Kent, you remember I met with you a year ago down in Southern California, then I moved back to Santa Rosa here, which is just north of the Golden Gate Bridge by about an hour. And I said, I told him what the Jim Quesada had told me about the fact that the Army Special Forces were always, every officer had, from the inception of the Army Special Forces had been CIA. And I said, can you confirm that? He said, yes, I can. But I can assure you that's all I can do is acknowledge I know that you've been told the right information. And just a matter of about, I think it was maybe 60 days later, he died from a fast-acting cancer. I think it was, as I recall, I believe it was a brain cancer. So then, of course, it's important to understand that we got some information from Ted Gunderson way back in the 1992, that he was faxing to someone he'd been helping there in Sonoma County. And one of them was, of course, from PSYOPs to Mind War. It was a typed draft. It was double-spaced, and it was a real rough copy. We didn't, of course, get this copy from Aquino until after he left the military in 06. And so, but another thing that Gunnison sent us that we got a copy of was a Reader's Digest story, July 1982. The title of the story was Missing 100,000 Children a Year in America Alone. And I kept in touch with Gunnison and worked with him from 92 until he passed away here a couple of years ago with cancer. And he told me that the FBI reports it's now 200,000. The children, most of them too young to run away from home, and yet what happens to these children? The FBI does not publicize this figure, but it's a fact. We have 200,000 are disappearing every year. Think about it, in 10 years, that's 2 million children, okay? So I can go on all day, but I'd rather answer questions. And if I answer your last question there, Terry?
Well, Doug, I don't know if we're getting the basics out there to the folks in a way that they're going to perceive it. I do know that Ted Gunderson, for example, when he was interviewing Chip Tatum, Chip talked about certain drugs that could be used where people would not have any memory of carrying out the acts that they had been instructed to do. It would literally make them so that they were completely susceptible to any instruction. They could, you could say, go kill this person or assassinate them or do some, set this person up. And that they would literally go out and do it and then not have recall of it afterwards because of the drug that they would give them. Do you remember Tatum giving that testimony?
Oh, definitely, sure. In fact, I had a privilege of interviewing him several days when we were, three of us, along with dozens of other people, were speaking at a five-day global congress in Daytona Beach, Florida, as I mentioned, it was February of 98. And so I asked him, I said, I've got a copy of a report here where you talk about using that drug that the people couldn't see, taste, or smell. And I said, what is that name of that drug? He said, well, we were using scopolamine. I said, where does it come from? He said, well, it's the heart of a plant in Central and South America that the witch doctors use. And I said, so if you gave it to me, how long would I be under your control? He said, I could give you enough for 30 minutes, 30 days, or 30 months. As long as you're under the influence of scopolamine, you have no recall of anything you've done, and yet you were like a zombie, you would do anything I told you to do, even if it violated your moral principles. And so that's obviously one of the drugs. I said, well, is that the same drug then that they were using in Washington, D.C. when the Indiana Camp reported in the Franklin cover-up? The subtitle was Child Abuse of Satanism Murder in Nebraska, and he actually has sold over 500,000 copies of that book. He now lets people download it for free on the Internet. And I said, is that the same drug? He said, well, I told the CIA would only kill people for the CIA offshore. And so I said, well, why would Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush put on a White House letterhead giving you orders to, and you publish and put it on your Internet website to go out and kill people? And they said, because I didn't trust this son of a bitch. And so, therefore, I would never kill anybody for the CIA without written a protection for myself and my crew that we would fly out called the Pegasus Team. And so it's important for people to understand that what happened was involved in the Franklin cover-up. It's well documented there. How the CIA would set people up. They would invite them to a party. And, you know, you may not even like your U.S. senator or your president, but if you're invited to a party in Washington, D.C., to meet one of your U.S. senators at a reception or meet the president or vice president, odds are a person would not turn down that kind of an invitation. And so what they would do is they would I said, well, from what I've read in Franklin the cover-up, you couldn't see it, taste, or smell it. And Chip Tatum said, that's right. In fact, when you got off the drug, then, of course, we would send you a picture or mail you a picture or maybe somebody just drop it on your desk and shows you having sex with a child. Or,
Doug, would you clearly give the name of that drug again?
Yes, scopolamine. S C O P O L. Oh, yeah, I have to write it out here to make sure I get it right. I'm glad you asked that. S C O P O L A M I N. Yep, scopolamine. And there's actually a,
now I also know that from the reports of Savali, who was actually an Illuminati trainer that was trained extensively in how to dissociate minds to create multiple personality levels. She talks about, and it was confirmed. Also, I believe by Carnden Hammond in his Green Bomb speech, which I recommend everybody go look up and read the Green Bomb speech by Carnden Hammond.
That's very important.
They confirm that they started these kids out at very, very early ages. I mean, we're talking, 4, 5, 6 years old, and they would put them on Demerol. And they would do different things that would literally shock the mind to disassociate it. And some of these kids that you were talking about that have disappeared, some of them were put through rituals and killed. Some of them were put into sex slave programs. They've been put into a lot of different of these training situations where they may have used them, for example, to train one of the people that they're trying to bring along and condition them, and they may use one of these kidnapped kids, just like David Schroeder shared with us, that kid that they literally cut his tongue out and took his eyes out and pretty much forced David into a situation where he literally killed the kid out of mercy.
Exactly.
That's kind of what happens to a lot of these kids that disappear. And what would really shock people is to know what percentage of our elected officials in Washington, D.C. are fully aware of these programs. Some of these guys that have been lifers, you know, they've been in the Senate for 35, 40 years, a lot of those guys are literally perverts and pedophiles. And some of the sex slave gals have been used to, you know, to service these guys and boys too. And that was a lot of what came out in, you know, the Franklin cover-up and John DeCamp's work, was it not?
Exactly. And I've had the privilege of being a guest in Ted's home for weeks and sometimes months at a time. I've been a guest in John DeCamp's home in the suburbs of Nebraska there, Lincoln, overnight guest, and as well as dined in their homes many times with him. It's been a real privilege to have a chance to work with such courageous people that are risking their children, their grandchildren, to try to protect our country and our Constitution.
I'm sorry, I keep muting because I got some background noise going on, so I don't mean to leave you with dead air.
Okay.
where would you like to go with this conversation now, Doug? What do you want? What would you like to discuss?
Well, because
you mentioned Vallely, who was a Fox News contributor. He's now retired. You know, he had open heart surgery here a couple of years ago. You know, he comes across like he's a patriot and like he's a freedom fighter and he's for the people. But when I heard that he, you know, wrote that book with Aquino, it prompted me to back up and say, wait a second, I don't want to become confidants with this guy. He's out there like a controlled opposition worker at this point.
Exactly. Right. Here he calls himself a Christian, and he says a lot of good things, obviously, as he's still serving our country, he claims, of course, but he's really serving the Illuminati and the Luciferians that run the Illuminati. And so it's very important to understand that he retired as two-star general in 1984, and I had the privilege of talking to one of Aquino's lovers. Her name is Linda Blood. Back in 1994, two of us had a conversation with her because she was writing a book called The New Satanist. And she said that she left her husband, I can imagine, named Blood, to go and sleep with Aquino and to run with, I mean, she was obviously a mind control victim herself, but the point is she broke program and it was put out of his book. And she told us in the spring of 94, two of us on the phone with her for an hour and a half, and she said that Aquino bragged about the fact that his link to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was Vallely. And so as Vallely rose, of course, so did the Aquino rise. And although he was exposed by Oprah and by Geraldo as a Satanist in 1988, Oprah did it in March, no, February, I'm sorry, February, I think it was 19, something like that, of 88. I would encourage everybody to go on the YouTube and look those interviews up. And then Geraldo was in October of 88, shortly before. It was a two-hour special that he did on the Aquino. And Ted Gunnison participated in that one with Geraldo. And so anyway, I give you this background because of the fact that people need to do their homework. I tell everyone, including my children, do not put your children in daycares, because even though most of the daycares are not operated by the CIA, the fact that in Linda Blood's book, when it came out in 95, I bought a copy of it right off the bat, so I learned it without paperback. And in that book, she quotes a gentleman who did a lot of good to expose CIA mind control. And there were 15 military bases, including, as I mentioned earlier, the San Francisco Presidio Army Base, but also West Point, where the CIA was hiring Satanists to work in the daycares, and all 15 of these military bases, the CIA had been torturing children and programming them to become future Manchurian candidates themselves. And the fact is that even though it was reported in her book, quoting this officer on this, the man's name escapes me now. I haven't talked to him since 1995, so I apologize for not remembering his name here 19 years later. But I called him after he read the fact that he quoted these. He says, multiple military branches and the FBI, and et cetera, et cetera, investigated these 15 military bases that had daycares torturing their military's children, and yet there was not a single person arrested after they documented with multiple agencies the children's torture. That just gives you an idea of how sick and perverted our FBI, CIA, and our military become. That doesn't mean most military like that, obviously they're not. But the fact is, those involved in mind control are the sickest, perverted people in the world. And yes, Gunnison told us that back in 1992, he came and spoke on, I picked the date of Friday the 13th of November, 92, to speak in a church. We had a packed crowd there a Friday night. All day Saturday seminar, but Gunnison said that there people have been interviewed who were raised in Satanism and put in prisons for crimes they've committed, and that they would ask these people after they were in prison. Some of them would go to counseling. Some of them would go to speak to the army chaplain, a military chaplain, or prison chaplain. And they would talk about the fact that in their home town where they lived, when they all Satanists got together for special events, they would give an approximate estimate of the number of people that were at those events. And so people like Gunnison went back and checked the population of those cities and counties, and they were able to extrapolate back there over 20 years ago that using those figures nationwide, that it was only about 1 to 1.5% of the people in those cities and counties, because most of them, of course, they would not have a big event in a city. They would go to the rural areas, so it would be more like a county event. And it figured out to be about 50,000 people were being human sacrifices on a yearly basis in America. And for some reason, as they started getting exposed, many of them said that they were increasing the number of human sacrifices to counter their exposure, to try to, it was basically, I guess, they like to think that when they're serving Satan, that they are having Satan's protection. And so what's so important to understand is that there's a lot more now, according to Gunnarsson, figures. As I said, the number of children have more than doubled in the last 20 years. I'm sorry, 30 years, because that was 82 when that report came out. So, but see, for example, it's important for people to realize if you're going to have children, you better stay home and take care of your own children or have a relative take care of your children. You should not have daycares doing it because of the fact that they're like Martin Daycare down in Manhattan Beach, California. Here they had Gunnarsson very involved in investigating that case, and he was able to get access to the building because the children had told, think about this, like Gunnarsson said, how could 460 children go to 200 therapists to all tell the same story, that we were taking the tunnels under the daycare, and we saw animal sacrifices, and there were tunnels under there, and many of them were taken through a tunnel and then up through a trap door in the bathroom in a building next door. They didn't know where they were. Obviously, they were just little children, you know, 2 to 5 years old in preschool. And the then what year was that McMartin daycare built? 1966, the same year that the Church of Satan was formed by LaVey in San Francisco. And so and what date was it? It was on April 30th, and it rolled over into May Day, May 1st. And if you look at the satanic calendar, I'm sure you can find it on the internet. It's going to be in my book. I got a copy of it from Gunnarsson through he faxed all these documents to someone he asked me to meet with in Santa Rosa, actually in Sonoma County. The man was living down in Petaluma. And so Peter Cherniff saved all these things, and so he gave me copies of them. Let me make copies of the documents. But April 30th calls for a satanic human sacrifice, and then May Day, May 1st, is the Druids' high holy day of the year. And so April 30th, and what is 6 months later? You do everything in 6 month cycles. And it's important to know these things so you can, you know, that calendar will help you a lot. So I've retyped it. It was a Xerox copy and it would have been a fax to it, so it was not a good copy. And so my book, when it comes out, will be titled For Angels Fear to Tread. And I have a subtitle, but I'm not going to give that out right now. But anyway, I was hoping to get it out before Halloween this last year, but because I was in the process of moving from California to back to Colorado, and I was going through so many boxes of things I'd been storing for years and reduced my shipping costs, I was not able to finish my book, but it's almost done. And so the bottom line is that Valali and No Telling, I would put it this way, anybody in psychological operations, either trained to be Satanists, and so Aquino, even though he was exposed, he stayed in the military for 40 years. They didn't kick him out of the military when he was exposed for torturing children by Oprah and by, there were 10, I met with a man who was in charge of the police report they first took from a victim of Aquino. And so his name was, oh boy, I shouldn't be trying to come up with names here. The pressure is on here, and I apologize that, but
you're talking about somebody in Nebraska?
No, it was a San Francisco cop. I met with him after Polly Class was kidnapped from our county as retaliation for us exposing Aquino's torture murders of many, many children in Santa
Rosa. Aquino's first name is Michael. Name is Michael, correct?
Yes, right. And his middle name, of all things, Aquino is an Aquino. Aquino is Spanish. And, of course, the president of the Philippines was Aquino. But Aquino, that's Italian. But his middle name is Angelo. It was Michael the Angel. And yet he was a Satanist. And in my book, I will just be disclosing the fact that it came out that Aquino's mother went to Germany before he was born, even conceived, and that his father was a German Nazi army officer, but never disclosed the man's name. Well, what's so important about that is that she came back to America pregnant with this man's child, and so we maintain, and this may shock people, but it's important to understand that Dr. Joseph Mengele is believed to be the father of Michael Aquino. So she came back here to America. She married a man named...
Wait a second. You just told me something I didn't know before. Would you repeat that, please? What is his relationship to Mengele?
Yes. As you know, Dr. Joseph Mengele was brought to America under Operation Paperclip after World War II.
Right, I knew that.
Right, so
yes.
The point is that right after, it was the January, Aquino's birthday is October, I think it's the 16th or 19th, I've forgotten the date now, but anyway, he was born in 46. He's 10 years younger than me, that's why I can remember it easy. But what happened was his mother got pregnant by a Nazi officer in January of 46, came back to America, and she married a man named Aquino. It was an Italian by the name of Aquino. And then, of course, Mengele was brought into America. And as you know, the CIA claimed that, we had Mengele doing lots of experiments, and he'd go back and forth to Brazil, and he did experiments with twins and this village down there, that he had to make experiments that they've got more twins there than any place else per capita in the world. And so, but the CIA said, Mengele got away from us, and he escaped to South America and died down there. That was what's called sheep dipping. The CIA lied about it. Mengele by someone who was a victim of a Mengele, Pierre Cherif, has dealt with Mengele most of his adult life. And, of course, he didn't know it because he had multiple personalities. He was born and raised in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Pierre Cherif was. But when he was about 18, 19 years old, he was brought to Marin County. But then he ended up living in Petaluma for the last 30-plus years. And so Gunnison got us together 21 years ago. And so I just do this background because this is from the list of Peter Cherif stating that what happened was that the Mengele, they changed his name from Mengele in America to Dr. Green and Dr. Greenbaum. And you mentioned, of course, the Greenbaum speech. That's a very important speech for everybody to get off the internet to understand. I've actually met with the man that wrote that speech and gave it in Maryland, as I recall, about 92. I met with him at the University of Utah. And
Corndon Hammond.
Excuse me?
Corndon Hammond.
Exactly. Yep. I met with him. I figured that since he hadn't done anything since then, that I better not announce. I just found out that he was living there, and I was living there for a year. So I went to the University of Utah after hours. It was about 5:15. I figured his secretary would probably get off work about 5. So I go in there about 5:15, try and catch him unaware. And sure enough, I was able to introduce myself to him, and I invited him to come and speak because Gunnison was coming up there and to speak in August of 2002. And so he said, "Please don't even tell me Gunnison you're talking to me, because I almost lost my marriage over that speech and the repercussions and all the pressure I had." And so I honored that request for many, many years until Ted was dying. And I told Ted that, he said, "Well, I knew he was living up there in the area, but if he didn't want to meet with me, of course, there's no reason to do it." But anyway, so the bottom line is that Dr. Joseph Mengele operated as Dr. Felix Polk, P-O-L-K. And he was chief dipped. Switched from becoming a psychiatrist to a psychologist. And I was referred to Polk, not knowing he was Mengele. And, of course, Peter, having multiple personalities, he was he didn't actually break program until he went into a county jail for disrupting meetings and trying to get them to investigate the crimes all the time. You go to churches and public meetings and synagogues and everything else. And so he decided to teach Peter a lesson and put him in a county jail for 5 months for doing nothing more than disrupting meetings. But anyway, I went and visited Peter while I was in jail there every year and kind of look for him and find him. And so the result was
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you up in the middle of a thought.
Well, I just want to say that Peter lost over 50 pounds. He's fasted in there and lost over 50 pounds, and the movies of his mind started going off. And that's when he first realized that he had been involved in Satanism himself. And years later, he told me, "Doug, I have done anything and everything to a child and little babies and children that you can imagine." Now, he's not proud of that, obviously, but he had no control over it because he was a mind control victim, a Latino, and also, of course, of his father, Mengele. And that's why they brought him out here, because the fact that Mengele was operating as Dr. Felix Polk at the University of California, Berkeley campus. And when I was referred to Polk, not knowing anything about this back in 92, I didn't see it. It was not until 10 years later that Peter told me about this stuff.
Is there a picture of Polk accessible on the internet?
Yes, but there are older pictures. But yes, you can see a picture of Dr. Felix Polk. But if you compare, if you take a young picture of Mengele without a hat on, see the hairline, the nose, the cheek, the jaw. The only thing that's different is the ears, which would be easy to do plastic surgery on the ears. And so you can see that it is one of the same people.
Good, so, I'd like to see that. I noticed, you know, in that article by Don Nikoloff where he shows the Scherr family photo, it has Reinhard Galen, it has Scorzini in there, it's got Bormann, it's got Mengele in the picture.
Right.
Along with who they represent to be, Prescott Bush and the young George H. Herbert Walker Bush, who is said to be, by that article, said to be George H. Scherr, Jr. He's sitting
exactly
there in his German naval uniform. So if somebody wants to get a picture of Mengele, he's in the very back of that picture standing next to Otto Scorzini. And Otto Scorzini, of course, is the one that revealed this photo to his potential future son-in-law, who reported it to, I got a mental block. I hate it when I get those mental blocks. Who's the guy that's the journalist that's been around for so long that that did that research that Don Nikoloff played off of? I hate it when I get those kind of mental blocks. It'll come to me later.
Sure.
But if you go do a search for Scorzini deathbed and put in Idaho Observer, because it was originally published in the Idaho Observer, and it was an article by Don Nikoloff, so you could put Scorzini deathbed Idaho, and it won't go take you to the Idaho Observer because they don't have it online anymore, but it was captured at a pro-liberty site. So when you do that search, it'll bring up a pro-liberty website, and if you go to that, there's like a 42-page article on this, and you can see Mengele in the back of that picture, and then go look him up, like Doug says, and compare those photos. That should be very interesting. I'll do that after the show's over with. But the interesting thing for me, Doug, is that people who have been through this, put through this conditioning, and you know, we talked in detail with David Schurter about this, and he confirmed a lot of what I had read and researched on it about how they would let the people go to sleep. They, even their own children, they would put through this disassociation process.
Hard to believe.
And they would let them go to sleep for, say, an hour or so, and then they would wake them up, and then they would put them into this conditioning. And they had one way of living their day life and another way of living their night life. It was like, you know, completely different.
Exactly.
You know, they lived the normal life of normal people, you know, the average person going to work, et cetera, during the day, and then at night they went to work on them. Well, the interesting thing to me about all of this was that once they disassociated their heads and got them to where they had like seven levels of personality, these people believed that what they were doing was good. They thought that it was optimizing their productive ability as a human being,
right,
and actually believed that this conditioning and the evil acts that they did and the sex slave stuff, and they believed all of that was good.
Yep.
It's amazing to me, especially when you read the works of Savali, when she became a Christian and she began to realize that everything had been turned upside down. It really was prophetic. It was like it says in the prophecy that that which is good will said to be bad, and that which is bad will be said to be good. They'll call it good. And that's exactly what this conditioning does to these people. It completely turns their morality upside down. One of our folks in our chat earlier mentioned the concept of cognitive heuristics. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Well, heuristics, I can tell you the little bit that I know about it. I'm certainly no expert, but the little bit that I know about it is that it gives you shortcuts, cognitive processes, so that you can make quick decisions and judgments. Now, obviously, that could have the result of making you more efficient in some ways, but it would also cut off your alternate judgments. In other words, you might think better of something, except that you've been through this cognitive heuristics and you've been conditioned to these shortcuts. So instead of thinking things through and coming up with your own solutions, you just go with what you've been conditioned to do. And that's kind of what they do with that. But they also do this in a myriad of other ways to the general public. You know, ads, the hidden messages, the subliminal, it's like you play the song "Yes We Can" backwards, and it says "Thank you, Satan," and your mind has a way of picking these things up, and so this whole concept, people need to recognize this, and they need to understand that we've all been chemically hit. They've been using the drugs on all of us, whether it's fluoride or whether it's the smart dust with the that they're putting into the aerosol program they're spraying in the skies, and whether it's the MSG or whether it's soy that's affecting our thyroid, or whether it's aspartame that's changing our body chemistry that they put in Equal and the diet pops, and we've all been hit with these chemicals, and some of those chemicals aren't even on the labels of the food because they use it in the processing of the food. And they don't actually put the chemical in as an additive, but it's already in the other things because they've used it to process it, whether they've bleached it or sanitized it with it or whatever it is. And we've been ingesting all of these things, including the GMO. So we've all been chemically conditioned, and we have to go through a detox process on a regular basis. Drinking a lot of water is critical to people. I mean, if you're not drinking enough water, like if half your body weight in ounces, odds are these toxins are building up in your system, and you're being dumbed down. You're under a mind control situation right now, and you don't even know it.
Exactly.
So this is the kind of thing we've got to wake people up to. But we've got to also understand the spiritual battle. And I had somebody in chat earlier saying, "Oh, you're going to turn people off by talking about the religious aspect of it." You know, people who are so scared of religion, which really we're not talking about religion. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
Jim?
Yeah. Terry, can you hear me?
Well, I can hear both of you, but it's sure weird that you can't hear each other.
I'm not sure how that got turned on, but maybe it's just in my ear. It is. Good. Okay, thank you. That was in my ear only. I was hearing another video audio playing, so I thought it was on the show live, and it wasn't, so forgive me for that. So at any rate, I lost my train of thought, but we've got a question from a caller, and I don't know if it's Jim or who it is, so I'm gonna bring him in if it's okay.
Oh, sure.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, Jim.
I wanted I wanted to address something that you had just said. You hit it right on the mark. Remember that recently that guy who was who did the shooting up in Washington, and he wrote Elf on his gun and said he was being targeted? Well, basically, the CIA had been doing investigations into being able to read people's minds by figuring out what hertz the mind was working on. And between 10 to 14 hertz, they found that they could actually communicate to the mind through that frequency.
Now, Jim, just to clarify, you're talking about the Navy Yard, right?
Correct.
The Navy Yard shooter? Okay.
Yeah, he claimed to be mind controlled, and they were using Elf on him. Well, Doug and I did a show where we went through a series of scientific journals and the different devices that they had designed to do exactly that. And one of the ones, when Doug said back during the Vietnam War that they were using microwaves on them, one of the articles stated that it was back in the 60s, actually, when they were doing this. But Elf, they said, oh, well, you know what, we communicate with our submarines, and they found through the communication of whales that they produce extremely low-frequency sounds, sonic sounds that travel halfway around the world. But what happened was they start sending these waves late at night. Now, they say that from like 12 o'clock on is when the demonic activity starts happening the most. Now, touching upon what you said about mind control and also what you said about spirituality, the Elf waves that they use generally start occurring about 12 o'clock on, and you can only imagine why. But the extremely low frequency, you have to wonder what kind of controls, like your cohort had mentioned earlier about the mind control and the spiritual battle that is taking place, and the fact that they are using these devices. I've got a brief thing that I read on Doug's show, and I'll go through just a couple of them. It says these page lists articles from technology publications which show how these technologies are being marketed in commercial forms and have also been and are being used to harass covert weapons testing victims. The reader is asked to remember that announced inventions with potential for national security are always already in the use covertly when announced. The SR-71 Blackbird surveillance aircraft was in use almost 30 years before the public saw it. So basically, he starts off with this first one. Now, the thing about this is they give the publication, the date, and the article. And the first one is Aviation Week in Space Technology, March 10, 1997. Radar warns bird of impending aircraft. This article by Bruce Nordwell, Washington Bureau, describes research being carried on by the U.S. Air Force Wright-Patterson Laboratory at Daytona, Ohio. The article describes the use of modulated radar signals to produce audible sound within the brains of the bird near airport runways and cause them to fly away and avoid collisions with landing aircraft. Other references on the work with animals or humans with audible microwaves. Science Volume 181, 27 July 73, page 356. Nature Volume 216, December 16, 1967, page 1139. Nature, Volume 210, May 7th, 1966, page 636. Journal Acoustical Survey of America, June 1982, page 1321. Bioelectromagnetics Conference, 1992, 13323 through pages 328. Pages 323 and 328. So basically what they have been using these frequencies late at night to reach our subconscious. Now, one thing I think they're doing with these is subduing the human psyche, because what happens is you've got Greece rioting. You've got riots in the European countries where the elf waves aren't being used, and yet Americans are so docile from everything from the fluoride they're putting into our water to these elf waves that they're running every single night, supposedly to communicate to their submarines. So the two things that you mentioned just clicked in my mind to kind of like relay these incidents as being not separated or segregated, but being used in conjunction with each other in order, as the person you had earlier mentioned, that we're all under mind control. And this is absolutely true. Terry, you there?
I'm here. I thought you were going to say something else. I'm sorry.
No, no. I have other scientific journals that mention what these devices are. And if you want me to give you a brief synopsis of a couple of those, I can.
Let's back up and talk about the voices again. Because
okay.
I think we need to stop and mention that. See, I totally believed that guy when he talked about hearing those voices, because the frequency devices that they've got, you know, some people say they can read your mind. Well, I don't buy that. I don't believe they can read your thoughts. I do believe that they can tell what your mood is. In other words, they can tell whether you're stressed or whether you're relaxed. You know, I think they can determine those kind of things from the frequency signals that are coming off of your brain. But I do believe they can inject voices into a person's frequency and make them hear it in their head. They did that actually to Jesse Ventura. You know, he talked about this, that he actually went to an experiment to see. He actually went to where they had one of these devices and had them do it to him, and he could hear the voices in his head. Blew his mind. Absolutely blew him away. But he did a show on that. One of his shows, he talked about that.
Oh, yeah. It says here, this list was furnished by the lab at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where this type of unclassified development is now in progress. And then it goes, the transmissions via modulated microwave pulses carried voices to selected weapons testing victims has been carried on for more than two decades, as reported by the victims. There has been little published about this phenomenon since direct-to-skull voice transmissions are consistently misinterpreted by psychiatrists as schizophrenia. Getting this information to the public needs concerted attention. And there was a Russian device where they were able to beam, I think it was done by the Russians, where they were able to beam two separate microwave beams to a person. And when it hit a wall next to them, something solid, or hit their skull, they would start to hear these voices. So there, as Doug knows, there has been what is known as TI, targeted individuals. And these people are constantly being electronically harassed in that way.
I might add something
Doug,
here.
Go ahead.
Since I moved to Colorado and arrived here 10 days after the Columbine High School massacre, and the reason I did that is because I was living in Las Vegas at the time, working close with Ted Gunnarsson, and what happened was, remember that was, of course, April the 20th of 1999. What was important is I started soon as the shooting took place, I heard about it, and of course, many of us suspected that it involved CIA mind control. And so I was buying 5 papers a day. I was buying both of the Las Vegas papers, plus I was getting USA Today, New York Times, and a Wall Street Journal. And this second day, it was really the first day I was in the papers, one of the newspapers of those 5, I regret to say, I don't recall which one it was, but they stated something that shocked me, but it didn't surprise me. It just shocked me that they would publish it. They said that they met with investigators, met with students who stated that before the shooters came on the high school campus, they met with an older man who was not a student. And that was the mind controller that I suspected had happened. And so the boys did what they called basement tapes, and I'm sure you remember this, Terry, that the boys mentioned that one thing that they were supposed to do it on April the 19th, which is National Patriot Day. It was for the last 200 years. But what happened was that Dylan Klebold got cold feet, so Eric Harris was saying on his video there that we're going to do it today, April 20th. And I give this background because that's important to understand how these mind control victims are being sent on the high school campuses, grade school campuses, some of them adults, some of them children, and they shoot people, and they usually end up committing suicide before anyone can get to them because they want to destroy the evidence in there. In mind control, it's easy to get them to commit suicide. And so I mentioned that one, and then, of course, we got the Aurora shooting here in the Aurora Theater. It was the first night of a Batman movie. Wasn't that back in July, Terry, as I recall, of 2012?
Yeah, it was about a year and a half ago.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you know about that? Because I know that you were aware of a lot of things that were never brought out in the media. You know, that it was a pretty huge cover up on that. You know, the fact that there was more than one shooter, the Patsy's father was. Can you talk a little bit about those details?
Well, yes, because I was in court with Aquino at that time, August 1st in 2012. He had me in court seeking a restraining order against me, and I had Dave Schurter's report describing that he had seen Aquino do over a dozen human sacrifices of children at Bohemian Grove, and of course Bohemian Grove is in Sonoma County, and I had Peter Chernoff in court with me reading his statement that he'd also seen Aquino do human sacrifice at Bohemian Grove. And so I didn't get a chance to do the homework that I wanted to on Aurora. If I had not, put it this way, if I had already gotten my book out, I would have been there and investigated the Aurora shooting because I was a lot clearer when you saw that kid. They said, you know, dyed his hair red, and he was, so his eyes were bugging out of his head. He was such an overdrugged, mind-controlled person. I understand that he actually was in a car outside of the theater, and when the police tried to get into the car, he was incoherent. They couldn't even get him to unlock the car, so they had to break a window to get in. So how could he be the shooter? Obviously, he was not the shooter. He was set up as a patsy. But what was one of the most fascinating things about that was the fact that Alex Jones featured on one of his programs, and you can go on the Internet and look up a map of Gotham City, and Batman movie had a map of Gotham City, and you can see where the name of it, Sandy Hook, is in Gotham City. And then it was, of course, about 5 months later, the Sandy Hook massacre took place in Connecticut, as I recall. And they say that that really never even happened, that there was actors and actresses that portrayed that. And I have not had a chance to do my homework on that because I've been too busy with Aquino and all the things I've been doing to expose him. I forced him to provoke him to take me to court twice to get a restraining order against me twice for 3 years each. I knew he would get it, but I was able to get on the record dozens and dozens of exhibits that I have in my book that will be released. And so, but if somebody out there has more information about Sandy Hook they want to cover, fine. But I want to mention one thing for sure before the end of the show, and that is that I have dear friends and for many years who were raised by pedophile fathers and used in CIA mind control, MK Ultra mind control, who were taken to Disneyland right in Los Angeles suburbs, as you know, and they would be taken there by their parent, and then you know everybody's dressed real casual, having a good time at Bohemian at the Disneyland, and they would be approached by two men in suits, and their job was to leave their children or child, in most cases a single child, with the men in suits, and they would take them down to the basement. There's a city under the city, and Disneyland is incorporated as separate. They have their own police department, so therefore the sheriff's department and the police in Anaheim have no jurisdiction to go on Disneyland's property. And how they were able to blackmail Disney into getting involved in CIA mind control and allowing the CIA to operate and torture mind control children in the basement there and program them will be disclosed in my book. And so there's just so many things we could cover. Like I said earlier, I told you, Terry, that I could go to 20 hours nonstop on all this stuff, but it'll give people a little taste of it. And remember this, it's important that they understand that the 33rd degree Masons worship Lucifer. Most of Masons are wonderful people. Most police and FBI and CIA are wonderful people. Most Protestants, Catholics, and Muslims, and all Americans are, most of them are wonderful people, but not the 33rd degree Masons. And the man that put out a book exposing the 33rd degree Masons was a 32nd degree Mason who became a Christian 2 weeks before he went to Washington, D.C. His name is Jim Shaw. And he went through the program there for a week of questions and everything. But he noticed at the end, the last day of the questioning, before they were acknowledged, and most of the people that went there never were allowed to become a 33rd degree because they didn't ask the questions right. But because of his role in being a leader of the 32nd degree Masons and their national worship leader, even though he didn't answer all the questions right, he promoted him to the 33rd degree. But he noticed that his friend had been with him all week long, went through a different door. And so the bottom line is that in order to become a 33rd degree Mason, 99% or more have to acknowledge they worship Lucifer, and therefore most of the 32nd degree Masons never become 33rd. But it's important to know that this book is dedicated to Ted Gunnarsson. I asked him one time, I said, Ted, how come you referred 2020 to me? He said, because after I had you on my radio talk show for 2 hours in February of 98, he referred 2020 to me in 3 months later in May. I was in L.A. We'd been in Daytona Beach in Florida, as I mentioned, with Chip Tatum and many others in February. And so I just want to acknowledge that in Ted's resume, he quotes F. Lee Bailey, one of the top criminal defense attorneys in the nation. And he worked for Chip Tatum for, I mean, he worked for F. Lee Bailey for a long time. And F. Lee Bailey wrote him a statement saying that Ted Gunderson is, quote, a person with investigative skills that are unsurpassed by anyone I know or have known, end quote. That's quite a compliment because, you know, he's working with people when he wrote that, that he was saying that they don't have the skills that Gunderson had. So there's just so much we could cover, but people need to understand there is a difference between the Satanists and the Luciferians, but they both worship the dark side that's controlling our country and the whole world. And so they're both very evil worship. Even in the Bible, you'll see where Satan and Lucifer are sometimes interchanged. But it's important to know that the Luciferians and the Satanists do consider themselves different. And so there have been a lot of good exposés about the CIA mind control, and two of the best ones came out right after Polly Klass's body was found. She was kidnapped from our county in Petaluma, and she was murdered in our county, kidnapped October 1st of 1993. And then her body was found in early December of 93. And Gunderson told me that Bill Colby, former head of the FBI, CIA, and in charge of the CIA's mind control, but also in charge of the CIA's war in Vietnam, of course, DeCamp and Gunderson were being briefed by us every week, and both of them came back to speak. They both spoke in Polly Klass's hometown before her kidnap, came back and spoke right after her kidnap. And we were putting pressure on the FBI and the Sheriff's Department and the Petaluma Police to tell the truth about why Polly Klass was kidnapped and murdered, because of the fact her grandfather endorsed a book a year before her kidnap called Breaking the Circle of Satanic Ritual Abuse. And when I rushed down to the headquarters and started working in the headquarters the day it was announced in the paper that they'd opened the headquarters, I met with Mark Klass at about 9:45. Just before they closed at 10 o'clock, and most people were volunteers who had gone home by then. And I'd been there a full day just stuffing envelopes, keeping a low profile, because we knew that it was retaliation for us exposing Aquino's torture murders of children in Sonoma County. And so I walked up to Mark Klass. Sure. And I said, Mark, I just returned from a two-week conference in Washington, D.C., a weekend conference 2 weeks ago. And I suspect I know the motive for your daughter's kidnap, but rather than traumatize you with what I suspect happened, I'm here to help investigate the case. And would you trust me to talk to one of your family members or a close loved one about what we think the motives are? I don't want to bother you and traumatize you any more than you already are. He said, see that man over there with the white hair? He said, yeah. Well, that's my father. Go talk to him. And so I went over and introduced myself to Joe, and he said, hey, it's been a real stressful day. Let's go across the street and sit on a bench across the street. Well, it was extremely hot October and November, and everybody that lived there will recall it was. And so we were sitting over there for about 45 minutes, and he was talking about everything but polyclass. And I said, Joe, I'm sorry. I appreciate all your war stories of World War II and everything. But remember, I want to talk to you about polyclass, what I think the motive is for her kidnap. I said, I'm sorry. Please ask me any questions you want to. I said, was there anything that polyclass kidnapper, since she had two of her girlfriends there at the summer party, she was supposed to be sleeping there alone that night, was there anything that he said, the kidnapper, because they, of course, police talked to the two little girls, 12-year-old girls, that were left there tied up. Was anything that he said, was anything he wore, whether it was a tattoo, jewelry, or anything that implied that he was a Satanist? And Joe said, oh, my God, no, oh, my God, no, no. He just went nuts. He said, Joe, I'm sorry. Why are you saying these things? He said, I should have been the first to think about that. I said, why would anybody think about something as sick as that? He said, because I endorsed a book a year ago. My endorsement's on the back of the book, and it's exposing Satanism in America. I said, yeah, Joe, but a lot of people expose those kind of subjects, and they don't have their children or grandchildren kidnapped. The motive has got to be in that book. What's the name of the book? He said, Breaking the Circle of Satanic Ritual Abuse. And I asked him, well, what's the author's name? He said, I can't remember. I said, you endorsed a book of such promise, and how come you can't remember? He said, because the man didn't use his real name. I said, oh, okay. Well, what name did he use? He said, I can't remember. I said, will you call him tomorrow and let me know? He said, sure, I will. And so I said, well, people don't worry about their children and grandchildren getting kidnapped for endorsing a book on Satanism, so there's got to be something in that book. And so the next morning he called me at the headquarters. I was there at 6 a.m. and because the news media would come there and do their broadcast for Good Morning America. It would be 9 o'clock, of course, back east. And so he called me and gave me, it was Robert Ryder, R-Y-D-E-R, was the pseudonym the man used. And I said, why did he... I asked him the question the night before, why did he use a pseudonym? He said, because his parents and grandparents, for generations back, were all Satanists, and they know the code of, the secret code is, you never break silence, because if you do, and you do expose what's going on, you get to be the next sacrifice. And it doesn't mean they just run you over by a car or shoot you. They torture you to death slowly. And so that's why I used a pseudonym. And so I call around the bookstores, Barnes & Noble and different stores, big stores, and I couldn't find it in Sonoma County. So I started calling Marin County, which is between Santa Rosa and the Golden Gate Bridge. And I found it in the bookstore. I rushed down there. And before I even bought it, I opened the table of contents and I saw that I identified the motive. There was a chapter on mind control. And what was so sad was they reported in the book that these people who were exposing it to therapists, and then they quoted some of the therapists by name. Some of the therapists, excuse me, they wouldn't let them use their names for obvious reasons, because they knew they were exposing the CIA mind control. It wasn't just a bunch of Satanists. And what was so bizarre was that there was a two-page summary in that chapter, and that two pages I will have in my book, because a book publisher went out of print, and you can't buy the book anymore. But what's so important is the two pages You're talking about people being taken to experimental laboratories for all kinds of experimental torture, drugs, everything you can imagine. And also what they call assassination programming, where they program people, as you heard Terry speaking about earlier tonight, folks, where they would actually program people to be assassins. And so they would program them to assassinate common people, but they didn't give any names of them, obviously, because then they would know who was breaking programming and exposing this stuff. So the McMartin daycare was a sad case. I don't want to get back on that because we'll never get justice for those precious children. But I met with one mother whose two daughters, she had twins, and she said that they were doing pretty good. And but I of all things, I didn't meet her with her in Sonoma County. I didn't meet her with her in L.A. County. I was about halfway in between. And so the McMartin daycare, as Ted said, how could 460 children with a twin therapist come back with the same story, and yet why didn't the Sheriff's Department or the Los Angeles Police Department excavate around the foundation of the McMartin, since the children are all taking to come out of there? Well, the problem is because it was a CIA operation, and there were actually four other daycares in the immediate area that were also shut down at the same time. McMartins were exposed, but that never even made the papers. And Gunnison was able to get a contract with the, after several years, the McMartins had not used all their cash, but they had to give their property with obviously a lot of money because it was several buildings on it, to the attorneys for legal fees. And so the attorneys got in a bind, and of course they wanted their money, so they sold it to a contractor. And so Gunnison was able to get a hold of a contractor and said, will you only let us excavate under the daycare there and see if we can find the tunnels of the children? You got a contract,
Doug?
And they were given. Yes.
Doug, we're down to 1 minute left. I want to thank you for coming on tonight and sharing all of your experience regarding mind control with us, but I also want to give you the final comment. You got about 45 seconds.
Okay, the bottom line is, folks, that freedom is not free. You need to get this book when it comes out, and you need to spread the word, because they programmed hundreds of thousands of children who are now adults in daycares to create anarchy in our country whenever they choose to do it. And that the camps acknowledged they were postponed from December 22nd, 1999. They can activate those programs any day they want to. God bless you all. Please pray for justice and that we get the book out in time to save a lot of lives.
I'll add to that beware of Wi-Fi frequency. It damages young children, and they're putting them into the schools. We've got them in our homes. We need to keep our kids away from that. Yahweh bless everyone tonight. Red, I didn't get you back in. I hope you have a good night, sir, and get a good night's rest. We will see you all next week on Walls in Our Minds.
Thank you, Terry and Red. Bye.
Good night, Doug.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict, dancing on the stage. Or they may call you cheap, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. A young Turk, maybe the head of some bigger TV network. You may be rich or poor, you may be blind or lame, maybe living in another country under another name, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Somebody.
Well, it may be the devil. Or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Maybe you're a construction worker working on a home. Might be living in a mansion, you might live in a dome. You may own guns and you may even own tanks. You may be somebody's landlord, you may even own banks. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yeah, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
You may be a preacher, spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. It may be somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Wear cotton, might like to wear silk, might like to drink whiskey, might like to drink milk, might like to eat caviar, you might like to eat bread, maybe sleeping on the floor, sleeping in a king-size bed, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. It may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Now you may call me Terry, or you may call me Timmy. You may call me Bobby, or you may call me Zimmy. You may call me RJ, you may call me Ray. You may call me anything, no matter what you say. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, and it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.